From Greenville, South Carolina, we present Let the Bible Speak. Let the Bible Speak is the radio ministry of the Free Presbyterian Church of North America, preaching Christ in all His fullness. This is Alan Cairns saying hello to you and welcome to this Let the Bible Speak broadcast. Today, in addition to our study of Psalm 138, verse 7, on the subject of personal revival, we'll hear messages and song from Shirley Herron and from Steve Eger. Before Shirley sings for us, Great is Thy Faithfulness, let me remind you of our mailing address and our toll-free telephone number. The mailing address is Let the Bible Speak, 1207 Haywood Road, Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. And our toll-free telephone number is 866-877-LTBS, 866-877-5827. If you haven't yet ordered your free subscription to our quarterly magazine, I trust that you'll do it today. If you haven't yet visited our website, then you don't know what you're missing. There you can listen again to all the audio files of our programs. You can reference our commentaries on the hot topics that we tackle here from day to day, or you can read or print the text files of those commentaries. And in addition, of course, you can visit our online bookstore, and there you'll find books, CDs, DVDs, things that will be a blessing to you and help you and equip you in the service of the Lord. You'll find all this and more at ltbsradio.com. Let the Bible Speak Radio. You can either use LTBS or write it out in full. Just remember the radio, ltbsradio.com, and I hope that you'll visit us there today. Now, Shirley Herron with Great is Thy Faithfulness.
Thou changest not thy compassion.
Dr. Michael Ruse, professor of history and philosophy at Florida State University, and author of The Darwinian Revolution, Darwinism Defended and Taking Darwin Seriously, recently acknowledged that evolution, at its base, is a religion. I quote, "Evolution is promoted by its practitioners as more than mere science. Evolution is promulgated as an ideology, a secular religion, a full-fledged alternative to Christianity with meaning and morality. I am an ardent evolutionist and an ex-Christian, but I must admit, in this one complaint, the literalists, by that he means the creationists, are absolutely right. Evolution is a religion. This was true of evolution in the beginning, and it is true of evolution still today." Close the quote. Now that, my friends, is plain speaking, and it confirms what Bible believers have been saying for a long time. It is not merely science that drives evolutionists. It's religion. They call it a secular religion. That is, a religion in which man is his own God. It is this fundamental religious belief that fuels the evolutionist's hatred of Christianity. Professor Ruse describes himself as an ex-Christian. I don't know how he defines the term Christian, but I can assure you that no one who was ever a Christian in the biblical sense of the term could ever sink to the depths of being an ardent evolutionist, a worshipper at the shrine of secular religion. We must remember what this ardent evolutionist says and put it to good use. Evolutionists usually claim that it is the demands of pure science that drive them to ban all consideration of creationism from the science classrooms of our schools. It is science that prohibits our students from being faced with the evidence that the universe and all in it is the product of an intelligent designer. It's all because of the rigors of the scientific method. That's the usual claim, and it has been so widely accepted that in most parts of the country, evolutionists have obtained a stranglehold on the educational system. Now we have it from the mouth of one of America's leading proponents of evolution. He and his fellow evolutionists are driven by religious fervor as much as by scientific fact. I would go further. It is the fervor of their secular religious faith that colors their interpretation of the scientific data. I say we should put this information to good use. How? Remember that the supporters of evolution have used the First Amendment clause of the Constitution to ban religion, especially any semblance of Christianity, from most schools and colleges in the nation. They never tire of crying that the government cannot and must not place its stamp on any religion or religious faith. You know the old saying, "What's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander." Well, it's time that the evolutionary gander tasted the sauce it has been cramming down everybody else's throat for so long. Here is the simple logic that Bible believers can force the nation's elected representatives and its courts to face. First, the government may do nothing to establish or give preferential treatment to any religion. Second, the theory of evolution is, on the confession of its proponents, a religion. Therefore, the government may do nothing to establish the theory of evolution or give it preferential treatment. Of course, you'll be told, we can't ban the teaching of evolution, we must teach something. Precisely. But there's no constitutional basis for giving preferential treatment to the teaching of evolution. Now that its cover has been blown and it is confessed as a religion, evolution has no right to maintain a stranglehold on the minds of America's students. The sooner parents and others who care about the future of America's youth make our politicians, jurists, and educators see this, the sooner we will begin the long road back from the moral and spiritual abyss into which the unbridled teaching of evolution has led our nation.
Oh, heart of Christ, once broken for us, 'tis there we find our strength and rest, our broken contrite hearts now solace, and
we start today at a crucial point of our study of Psalm 138, verse 7. We all face trouble, and often it's inexplicable to us. We must start with what we know about our unchanging God, and the light of this, seek to understand and deal with our troubles. Every time you focus on the question, on the problem, on the trouble, and from that you try to argue up to God, you're going to end up denying the God of the Bible, questioning the God of the Bible, and you'll end up, if you go the whole way, creating a God of your own imagination, a God in your own image. And that's idolatry. The biblical answer is, we start with God. I know from what God hath revealed about himself what God is. I know from the gift that God has made in the person of his own dear Son. I know by the mighty transaction that God did at Calvary. I know by the sacrifice of God's Son to save our souls from hell. I know from God's Word what God is. I know that God has not forgotten to be gracious. I know that no matter how I can or cannot explain the conundrums of life, God is holy. God is just. God is good. God is love. That I know. So let me start from there, and in the light of that, explain the difficulties and the sufferings and the troubles, if I can. And if I can't, let me say, I cannot explain, but I can trust the God who is what he says he is, and will do what he says he will do. David did that. He did not focus upon the trouble. He had to walk through it, but he did not focus upon the trouble. He did not allow the fear of danger to overcome him and to paralyze him. He turned his eyes upon the Lord. As he said in Psalm 121, I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills, from whence doth come mine aid. My safety cometh from the Lord, who heaven and earth hath made. I love the words of Psalm 61, verse 2, from the end of the earth will I cry unto thee when my heart is overwhelmed. David was not denying that he was overwhelmed. He was not saying, Lord, I have an easy answer to the problems I'm facing. I can argue and philosophize my way through them. He's saying, Lord, I am overwhelmed. But in that day, I will get my eyes upon the Lord, and from the very ends of the earth, I will cry unto thee. And then he prayed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. When your heart is overwhelmed, that's the prayer. When life doesn't make sense to you, remember it makes sense to the Lord. When you seem to be in danger of being overthrown completely, cry, Lord, lead me to the rock that is higher than ever, than I am. Verse 4, he says, I will abide in thy tabernacle forever. I will trust in the covert of thy wings. That's the confidence that led David to say, though I walk in the midst of trouble, thou wilt revive me.
As Micah said, chapter 7 and verse 8, "Rejoice not against me, O mine enemy. When I fall, I will arise." I may fall. Trouble may knock me down, but it will not keep me down. I will arise because my eyes and my confidence are in the Lord. You see, David realized that the threat of Satan to destroy us by any means cannot materialize because God, the Lord, has promised to sustain us and support us. David understood quite well what Satan's purpose was, but he understood no matter what that purpose was, the Lord's the one who directs us and our paths, even when those paths lead us into trouble. Now, this is not to exonerate the devil from what he does to hurt the people of God. It's not to exonerate men for what they do in hurting each other and in doing evil and wicked things. But at the end of the day, the Christian has got to realize, as the Psalm 66 verse 10 says, "Thou, O God, hast proved us. Thou hast tried us as silver is tried. Thou broughtest us into the net. Thou laidst afflictions upon our loins. Thou hast caused men to ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water. But thou broughtest us out into a wealthy place." Why does God lead his people those ways? I can't give you the answer in every detail, but I can say this. Here's an awful list: proving, trial, brought to the net, afflictions in the loins, man riding over our head, fire and water. That's a long list of trouble. But the end of it is to bring us into a wealthy place. An experience with God now and an enjoyment of Him both now and forever. That's God's purpose. See, it's hard for me to understand sometimes, and I'm sure it's just as hard for you, that the great good of my soul is not what I may think it to be. The greatest good is not for me to have immediately everything that I want, when I want it, why I want it. The greater good may well be that the Lord deals with me to cut away proud flesh and conform me to the image of His Son, so that my hope and trust will be in Him, my confidence will be in Him, my devotion will be to Him, my whole focus will be upon Him, and my greatest purpose in life will be to glorify Him, no matter what the cost. He'll bring us into a wealthy place. Didn't He say through Jeremiah in that verse that we have all quoted so many times, in Jeremiah 29 and 11, "I know the thoughts that I think towards you. I know the purposes of God for you." That's what He's saying. They are thoughts of evil, or thoughts of peace and not of evil. No matter what the appearance is. And at that time, He was visiting the most awful chastening upon the people whom the prophet was addressing. But He's saying, "I know the ultimate purpose here, and it's not an evil purpose. It's a purpose of peace. To give you an end and an expectation." He's now talking about your future. He's saying, "I have my eye on that." I was looking at the 71st Psalm in this connection. Verse 20 says, "Thou which hast showed me great and sore troubles shall quicken me again." That's the very same thing. "Though I walk in the midst of trouble, Thou wilt revive me." You've shown me great and sore trouble, but thou shalt quicken me again, and shalt bring me up again from the depths of the earth. Thou shalt increase my greatness and comfort me on every side. Now we have come full circle. Though I walk in the midst of trouble, there's trouble in every side. Thou wilt comfort me on every side. And for every trouble, there's a comfort. For every difficulty, there is grace. Because we have a God who is able to deliver. How often have we read or sung the 23rd Psalm? The Lord is my shepherd. This is what's included in it. In verse 3, he said, He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Now that path is going to take us ultimately through the valley of the shadow of death. And he says, Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is the very same man who's saying, I walk in the middle of trouble. I'm surrounded by trouble, but surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You see, what enabled David to say, goodness and mercy shall follow me, was the assurance of this promise in our text this morning, Thou wilt revive me. Now, believe it or not, there are two main points of that I have never even got to yet, and my time's just about gone already. But let me point it out to you that promise has two elements in it. One is survival, and the other is revival. Though I walk in the midst of trouble, Thou wilt revive me. The word means, I suppose, most simply, Thou wilt give me life. Thou wilt preserve me. As the psalmist says in Psalm 118, verse 17, I shall not die, but live and declare the works of the Lord. The Lord hath chastened me sore, but he hath not given me over unto death. Now, I want you to understand this. And it's very easy to say, if I'm not suffering what you're suffering. But I'm not saying it facilely or tritely. The devil can't kill a Christian. Forget about all this charismatic rubbish of what the devil can do in possessing a Christian and even killing him. The devil cannot kill a Christian. I want you to understand that. When we come to die, it is not an enemy that will take us through those gates, but our shepherd. It is not Satan who holds in his hand the keys of death, but the risen Christ who says, I have those keys. They are in his hand. We are going to die. Unless the Lord comes first, we are going to die. But when we come to die, it is our Savior Shepherd who died for us and rose again, who through death destroyed the devil who had the power of death and delivered us, who through fear of death were subject to bondage. It is Christ, the risen one, the living one, who has said, I'm going to lead you through. I'll carry you through. And until then, He'll support us. Whatever the trouble, whatever the trial, whatever the suffering, whatever the anguish, whatever the affliction, whatever the challenge, He'll support us. He'll preserve us. And He'll use our circumstances to make us useful for His glory.
listening to Let the Bible Speak, the radio ministry of the Free Presbyterian Church of North America. I hope that you found today's broadcasting a blessing to your heart. If you'd like to email us, our email address is ltbs@freepres.org. Or if you'd prefer, you may write us at Let the Bible Speak, 1207 Haywood Road, Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. We would love to hear from you. If you'd like to know how to be saved and how to be sure you're saved, we'd like to send you my booklet, A New Beginning, and I think that you'll find it very helpful. Each quarter we publish a free full-color magazine, Let the Bible Speak Quarterly, with a good variety of Bible teaching and testimony. It's available to all who request it. If you'd like to receive more information about the Free Presbyterian Church of North America and its ministry, we'd like to send you our booklet, Separated Unto the Gospel. Or if you'd like to have tape or CD copies of the messages here in Let the Bible Speak, you may have them by contacting us. Or you may visit us on the web at letthebiblespeakradio.com. Now that's a lot of information to digest all at once, but you can find it all on our website, letthebiblespeakradio.com. There you'll be able to listen to and download our programs, visit our online bookstore, and read a text version of each day's commentary. So visit us today at letthebiblespeakradio.com. This is Alan Cairn saying thank you for listening. I trust that you'll join us each day at this time, Monday through Friday, as we let the Bible speak.